Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody's having a great day to this point. Let's bring in John Glennon from Broadway Sports. John, how you doing?
I am well. How are you guys doing?
We'll get you to weigh in on – we're good, by the way. Weigh in on something we were just talking about to end the last hour, just because you've been in this market – for a long time. There's a report out there, and just get your vibe. Okay, you know the sports landscape and scene here. There's a report out there that I'm sure you're aware of where the Toronto Raptors, they're not sure if they're going to play in their city. Just like the Blue Jays played in Buffalo, they may be looking for a home in the States this upcoming NBA season, and Nashville was one of the possible landing spots. So there was real interest in Nashville being their home for this year. How do you think that would go? Do you think there, if there were, let's just say for the sake of this conversation, we don't know how long the NBA season is going to be, but let's just say there were 41 home dates. How do you think, if all they were allowed to get in was 7,000 fans or what have you as the marker, how do you think that would be received in this market?
Good question. You know, I think certainly if it was a capacity of 7,000, you know, I think that would, you know, I guess help attendance-wise. But, you know, I think it seems like everybody in pro sports certainly seems to love Nashville. You know, everybody seems to agree that it's got great demographics, that when it really gets behind something, particular in sports, you know, there's a ton of support for it. I don't know, though at some point, you know, of course, we've heard over the years, you know, certainly there's a plan, a hope to get baseball here as well. And you just wonder where the tipping point occurs if Nashville's ready for another major league sport. I know this would only be for a year.
This is a one-off, yeah. It's a one-off.
Right, with the Raptors. I think there would be, you know, a lot of interest. 41 games, 41 home games is a lot for you know, having some interest there. I'd be curious, to be honest, you know, because there are obviously no ties, you know, to the Toronto Raptors or anything like that. So I guess the scare, if you will, is maybe you end up with a situation like years ago, decades ago, we saw with the Oilers when they hit Memphis and there were no ties, no connections. The team wasn't going to be there for a while and, you know, no one really seemed to get behind it. But I'd be curious to see. I know there would be a lot of excitement in general about it.
Yeah. What did you make of yesterday? Let's just start with Mike Vrabel's press conference on the question that he was asked after the game from Joe Rexrode on Sunday in the loss to Cincinnati. And then, of course, the questions that were asked yesterday about it, and he knew it was coming. What do you make of what's kind of going on defense and how it seems like as of today, he's pretty defiant to act like there's, you know, that a named defensive coordinator would change anything.
Yeah, you know, when the defense is playing as poorly as it is now, you know, and repeatedly as we've seen over the last several weeks, I think you certainly have to start going through the variables. You know, this defense was, you know, a decent defense. It wasn't great last year, but certainly solid. So you know, now are you saying, okay, is it the players that you left? You know, Casey, was it Ryan? You know, was it a defensive coordinator situation? Was it the loss of the assistants? So I think all those questions have to be looked at. I think what really could have helped this defense, you know, whether a specific coordinator is named or added per se, you know, steering away from that just for a second, what really could have helped is with all the change, this would have been a great year to have an off season for the Titans. Instead, you know, you get no OTAs, you know, no mini camps, no preseason games. So a new play caller you know, doesn't get broken in, I guess, nearly as much. And you don't get adjusted to the new assistants quicker. You don't get adjusted to the new players as quick as you'd like. So, you know, this strange offseason really came at an inopportune time for the Titans. And I think we're seeing some of that, you know, to an extent now, whether it's coaches, coordinator, or players. I think all of that, you know, there's certainly some kinks that are still being worked out, to say the least.
The three guys on defense that, you know, was brought in to help, and the third guy that I'm going to mention in this conversation was obviously supposed to help on a much smaller scale and level, but he's been thrust into a bigger role, which, as we've seen thus far, is not the role he needs to be in. But when you think about Vic Beasley with the losses that they had on defense and then trying to replace them with Vic Beasley, Clowney, and then Jonathan Joseph is the third guy I mentioned that was supposed to be on a more reduced role, and the way they've played thus far through seven games, is there any way they can squeeze more? I mean, they've just simply got to get more. If this defense has got any chance of changing in the second half of the season, is there any way in your mind that there's another level for these guys? Can they get another level out of these guys, or is this just what they are?
Well, that's the question, and I think that's why they made that trade to bring in Desmond King as well, because what they are right now is not nearly good enough. When you're giving up third down conversions at over a 60% rate through the course of an entire season, you know, at a 67% rate for the last 4 weeks, you just can't win games like that on any kind of consistent basis. You know, there's going to be some games where you can outscore opponents, some games where you can get more turnovers than opponents and you can find a way to win. But consistently, it's just not going to happen with a defense like that. So in terms of those new guys, you know, Beasley, I think what the Titans saw there, you know, there was a lot of red flags about Beasley. Certainly, you know, people disagreed with this signing from the start. But what they saw was a guy with a lot of potential, a guy who played the same position as Mike Vrabel, and that maybe Mike Vrabel gets a hold of this guy, you know, the hands-on method, and really coaches him up. We haven't seen that so far. Clowney was a guy who last time he played under Mike Vrabel had some great stats. Again, you know, this is a guy who's getting paid money to sack quarterbacks, though, and he is just, you know, between Beasley and Clowney, there are zero sacks right now. That's the bottom line. So maybe the fact that they're bringing in Desmond King maybe makes that secondary just a bit better. Adoree Jackson coming back at some point makes it just a bit better. And all of a sudden you have a little bit more time for that rush to get home. So maybe one group that's struggling helps another group that's struggling. But right now, you know, the Titans can't really hang their hat on either the pass coverage or the pass rush, and that's a bad spot to be in.
John Glennon is with us. We're talking some Titans here. So, John, it's a little hard to guess, but what do you think we're going to hear about Brett Kern going forward here? Because special teams has already been an issue, and he is, of course, the best they have in terms of a special teams participant. But if he's out for a while, what do they do?
That is a significant concern, I would say, going forward here, because, you know, Mike Vrabel left it a little bit open-ended yesterday about whether Brett Kern will be back for this Sunday. But the fact that, you know, one report had three punters coming in to be looked at by the Titans this week. So I think that is pretty much a sign that there's a lot of doubt over whether Brett Kern plays here. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at a situation, say you're looking at the field goal situation in particular, you're looking at a snapper who's had bad snaps in 2 weeks, a kicker who's missed four of his last five field goals, and then a new holder as well, since Brett Kern probably won't be available. That's it's a bit of a dangerous situation, to say the least. You know, we'd have to see who the replacement holder would be. But then obviously, you know, just the simple punting as well. I mean, Brett Kern has been Pro Bowl guy the last 2 years, a huge weapon in terms of the amount of punts inside opponents 20 and the amount of fair catches that he gets as well. So, yeah, you don't, you know, it's one of those situations where you don't worry necessarily so much about the punting game until something like this happens. and then all of a sudden you'll see the ramifications. But yeah, the Titans have to hope that Brett Kern won't be out for long. That's for sure.
John, I'm not sure if it was you that asked the question, but I know you were participating in the Zoom call. It sounded like a lot has to go right. Almost everything has to go right in order for Desmond King to be on the field Saturday to play on Sunday. So what do we gauge the chances of him actually being in uniform against the Bears?
Yeah, as best I can tell, the way it works is this. When a player is traded, when he gets to the new city, that he can start taking tests immediately. He has to have 5 straight days of negative tests plus a 6-day point of contact testing before he can get even in the building. So even assuming Desmond King traveled yesterday, went to Nashville, started the testing process, it appears the earliest he would even get in the facility is Saturday. Now, he can still take part in the Zoom calls. He can still prepare for games that way. But, you know, even if everything goes right, do you want to toss in a guy into the lineup before he's really been on the field, maybe except for a walkthrough? I don't know. You know, that will depend on his level of preparation in Zooms and so forth. But I think the good thing is for the Titans that even if Desmond King doesn't play this week, you still have him ready for that long stretch. I think it's 5 straight conference games, including 2 games in 3 weeks against the Colts, which are, of course, crucial to the division pursuit. So you've got him, you know, in those games for sure. And, again, Adoree Jackson, you know, if I had to guess, I'm thinking he's back this week. So all of a sudden, you know, in a couple weeks anyway, this secondary should look considerably different. And a guy we were talking about before, Jonathan Joseph, instead of getting 65 snaps a game at the age of 36, is maybe getting, you know, 8 snaps or 10 snaps like the Titans hoped originally. So that's a significant difference there.
John Glennon of Broadway Sports talking Titans here with us on Darren, Donnick, and Chase. So you bring up Adoree Jackson. So you're pretty confident that you think that he's not going to end up being shut down for the year? That this is going to be okay? He's going to be in the lineup Sunday?
That would be my guess. But you have to remember, even if he doesn't play this week, he is not shut down for the year because the new rules this year for IR, you know, the
COVID. Yeah, I'm confused by this whole thing.
Yeah, it's easy, too, because they've changed a lot of rules. But he could go back on IR, even if though his window closes. He could go back on IR, miss another 3 weeks, you know, and the process could begin again at that point. Or if the Titans felt like he was only going to miss 1 or 2 more games, they might just activate him anyway, even if he can't play for Chicago, and they say, well, we think you'll be ready for Indianapolis the following week, so we don't want to lose you for 3 games. We won't put you on IR. We'll just sit you, even though you're active, against Chicago and get you in against Indy. So, again, it's a guess on my part, but, you know, he's practiced 5 of the last 6 days. You know, Mike Vrabel seemed to indicate he'll be back out there again on Wednesday. So I think at some point soon they're going to get some help from Adoree Jackson. We'll see.
John, real quick, I need to step in here because I think we're thoroughly confused. You're the first person. I've talked to people about this over the weekend. You're the first person to lay it out can you say that again? Because it was my understanding from people that I talked to that either he's activated this week or he's got to get shut down. So can you tell me that again, what the options that they have? Because I haven't heard anybody else say this.
Yeah, it's my understanding, and I hope I'm not leading everyone down a terrible path here. But, you know, because of the rules that have changed this year for IR, you know, he is operating in a 3-week window right now that they opened for him for practice.
Which would end this week. Which would end this week,
correct?
Which
ends this week, correct, yes.
Okay.
He can. But because of the rules changed this year, in the past, yes, if that window closed and he wasn't activated, he's done for the year. But I believe, and I will double-check this, and I will get back to you guys immediately if it's not the case, but I believe because of the rules changes this year, you don't have that situation. He could go again onto IR for another 3 weeks, or they could activate him, you know, for a even if he's not ready, you could activate him. And if he didn't play against Chicago, you know, he could still play against Indy or the following games
right.
as well.
So he could be on the roster, but he could still be deactivated on Sunday, just like you deactivate
correct.
Several people.
Right, exactly. And that may be, you know, obviously we're looking at a guy who hasn't played a game yet in seven games. So, you know, it still may be a situation where they want to try and work him a little bit more, and that would be the better way to go.
So you're in these Zoom conferences every day. And I noticed yesterday in listening to Mike Vrabel, that there was you could tell he knew what was coming. He knew what he was going to have to answer. But he did have, a calmer sense than we've heard on a Monday press conference outside of, you know, maybe one interaction towards the end. Did you get that sense? How do you think he's handling some of this adversity in his third year as a head coach that maybe he didn't handle as well in the past?
I think he's handling it pretty well for the most part. I've certainly seen coaches who have, you know, been much edgier in their day. You know, I mean, I think overall he still has to, you know, he's looking at a big picture that's not terrible at this point. You know, I think, you know, when the Titans had the big COVID outbreak and were 3-0 at the time, I think, you know, if you had told Mike Vrabel you'll split the next four games, you know, it wouldn't be the end of the world. Maybe he would have thought it would go differently. Maybe they'd lose the first two games coming back from that and then win two. But, you know, realistically, they're still 5-2. You know, they're still tied for the division lead. And we believe that they will be getting healthy and better in the secondary as well. So, you know, it's not at the end of the world. I think the longer that this defense struggles, and the longer they can't get off the field on third down and can't play red zone defense, those questions regarding a defensive coordinator and how much role he is playing in the defense as well will continue to pop up. And then that's when things will probably get more uncomfortable.
We saw Ryan Tannehill throw that interception on Sunday. Darren said it might be the worst pass he's seen him throw as a Tennessee Titan. I know there are some, I'm not saying I'm one of them, that there's still that little piece of them in the back of their head that say, oh, he's going to turn into Miami Tannehill. But I feel like he's, when he's had a bad throw or he's had a bad game, he has bounced back. Do you get that sense from him that going into Chicago, he's studied that, he's moved on from it, and it's not something that you really have to worry about?
Yeah, it was such a rarity in really two regards. You know, one, it's been such a rarity that he has thrown an interception this year at all. And I think that's only his third of the season. And also, this team has been so good in the red zone and in goal-to-go situations. So to see them fail there, you know, was a surprise. And you're right, that was a poor pass. You know, I think it could have been intercepted by one of two players in that regard. But, you know, I think that's more the outlier than the norm that we've seen from Ryan Tannehill. I think, you know, will Ryan Tannehill be affected by the loss of Taylor Lewan at some point? Will there be more pressure? Will there be some quicker throws? You know, maybe a slightly less accurate rate for Ryan Tannehill? Yes, I think all those things will happen. But, you know, I think for those people who are looking at, you know, one red zone interception saying, you know, hey, I told you so, here comes the big tumble, I don't think we're going to see Miami level Ryan Tannehill at this point either. I think he's, you know, moved beyond those low expectations.
He's John Glennon of Broadway Sports. Hey, Johnny, we appreciate it as always.
Okay, thanks, guys. And I will check on that IR again, and I will give
Please
you the
do.
Word
yes.
if it's not the case.
Yes, need a report on that. John Glennon does great work for Broadway Sports. Has covered Nashville sports, not just the Titans, for a long time. We'll have more on that. But, Darren, tell us about DraftKings.
I'll be more than happy to do that, Chase. And you know, if you've been listening to the show, DraftKings is live and up and running here in our wonderful state of Tennessee. Yes, sports betting, mobile sports betting, it's here. And DraftKings is the place. Now, you may know them as the leading fantasy brand, but they have taken their passion for sports and developed America's top-rated sportsbook app. And for a limited time, the DraftKings Sportsbook app is offering all new users up to $1,000 with their first deposit. This isn't some offshore operation like other gambling sites. DraftKings is a legitimate sportsbook based right here in the U.S. So you can be confident that your funds are safe and secure. With the DraftKings Sportsbook app, you can bet from wherever, whenever. You don't even have to leave your house. Head to the app now. Check out all the DraftKings Sportsbook app has to offer and see today's odd boost and promotions. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the code 1025GAME when you sign up. For a limited time, all new users get a deposit bonus up to $1,000. You heard me right, $1,000. Don't forget the code 1025GAME. Get your deposit bonus up to $1,000. That's only on DraftKings Sportsbook app. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
We're at the halfway point in the NFL season, and after Week 8, Dan Orlovsky, which team is in the most trouble with what you saw?
Yeah, it's got to be the Tennessee Titans. We know that their offense is really good. You know, Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown, like, they got really good pieces on offense. But their defense is struggling, and it's really because their front. They went out and spent money on two big free agent signings, Vic Beasley and Jadeveon Clowney. They have zero sacks combined. I mean, they have spent and invested way too much money in those two players to be having as little impact as they're having, because their secondary is not playing great, and they're not, and they got to get healthy back there. But when your front can't generate any pressure, everyone on your defense suffers. And I don't care how good your offense is. It reminds me a little bit of like the Chiefs last year, midway through the season. We're going, their defense can't get off the field. Their defense line's not good enough. Now, I don't think they can turn it around like the Chiefs did, because they don't have the special playmakers on the back end. But if those guys rush a little bit better, it'll help. But those two players have to play better. And it just concerns me that they can't get any stops on defense.
There you go, Dan Orlovsky on ESPN. Don't forget, Titans fans, this Sunday, pregame show, Corner Pub downtown, 9:30 until 11:30 a.m., getting you ready for the Titans-Bears kickoff at Nissan Stadium. They've got locations, Corner Pub in Bellevue, Brentwood, or the location I just mentioned downtown where the pregame show will be, with great beer specials, including $1 off Yazoo and Happen Harry's draft beers, plus Happen Harry's bucket special. The pregame show, of course, has Jarrett Stillman, Floyd Reese, the GM, and forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, and that's brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by Rumble On, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers. All right, Dan Orlovsky saying what we've been saying. Nothing really big there. That was not anything earth-shattering. It's just always interesting.
Repeats everything that we just talked about yesterday.
I guess it's just always a little bit interesting when people on the national level are noticing it too, right? And it's impossible not to notice how bad the defense has been. And as we talked about yesterday, is this something? If the, you know, whatever happens with this Adoree Jackson, and we still have to get word. I want to know what. I don't know one way or the other. I'm just going on what I'm being told, and John kind of presented a different angle, and I would just like to know what is the true rule of where he stands right now with his availability and what they have to do, or do they, this week. So what decision-making. But if they can get Adoree Jackson, now that they've traded for Desmond Kean, is this something that can truly – help this defense? But as Dan said, as we've been saying, it's got to start up front.
Yeah, of course.
It's got to start up inside out, man, inside out. And if you're not going to get any pressure on the quarterback, and last week was alarming. 7 sacks coming into the season, and a makeshift Cincinnati offensive line, and Joe Burrow was tied for the most sacks in the league with Carson Wentz. And they couldn't touch him on Sunday. That's alarming to get that fixed moving forward.
No question. And I feel like it's going to be like The Empire Strikes Back with the Millennium Falcon. You spend most of the movie trying to fix the hyperdrive, you know, and it doesn't get kicked in until the very, very end, and you go through tough times. I just think the defense is going to be a work in progress for several weeks. Hopefully they eventually do get it fixed and they can jump to hyperdrive. But I'm a little bit more troubled right now with the Brett Kern and the special teams situation. That is a major. It's one thing to have, you know, an area that you're trying to fix and you're spending attention every week trying to get it right. and you've got an offense that hopefully can mask some of the problems, but it's hard to mask two phases of the game. If you've got terrible special teams plus a shaky defense, it's really hard for your offense to make up for it. So that I'm really concerned about Brett Kern, because they're 31st in the league in overall special teams with Kern. Now you're telling me maybe you don't have him, and you might have to replace two-thirds of the battery for your holds, for your field goals, for a shaky field goal kicker. That's not a good recipe.
No, not at all.
It doesn't matter who's holding the ball. If Bo Brinkley keeps skipping the ball on the ground, it doesn't matter who's holding it.
Which is so not like him. Like that is, I mean, Bo Brinkley, like you said, I think you said it yesterday, Darren, of the only conversation we've really had about him, and we mean this in a good way, is that he won that barrel of whiskey. I mean, he's been solid.
Because of a hole-in-one on a golf course.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been solid for them. So the fact that you've had low snaps the last few weeks is really alarming, because he doesn't do that.
It's not even low. I mean, it's literally rolling it.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. I've never been a long snapper, but I've actually played center, believe it or not. So I actually have snapped a football. I was never the long snapper, but, you know, to be doing it as long as he has, and all of a sudden back-to-back weeks he's rolling the ball to the holder? I mean, what's going on? How does that happen? This is not a new guy.
Right.
I know he's coming off COVID, but, I mean, still. I mean, come on. This is his craft. This is what he's been doing. I don't know why this is happening. And it doesn't matter who's holding. If he keeps doing that, there's going to keep being disasters on special teams.
But if you add – let's just say – well, they have to make a decision, right? They do have to decide. They do have another long snapper that they brought in when Brinkley was on the COVID list. So if they make that change, that's an X factor. Just simply by changing the holder, that's another element of it, something that's got to go right. And even if everything's going right, you have a kicker that has not been reliable. Now, some of the missed kicks are directly related to the setup, right? There have been two kicks that have been blocked. And right. There have been some bad snaps, you know, so it's not all Gostkowski, but even on top of that, Gostkowski has not been consistent. So that's a lot. And that's just the field goals. Then you're trying to replace the best punter in the game. So no matter who you bring in there, there's going to be a drop off, and you haven't returned or covered kicks very well. So that's a lot of layers of special teams concern. That's a huge thing. I think that's maybe more alarming even than the defense.
Yep. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tyrikus, you're first up. Welcome in.
Man, appreciate that, man. First off, whoever pick up the phone calls when I call, man, I appreciate him, man, because I'll be like this Tyrikus. He's like, oh, hey, how you doing, man? We're going to get you right now. He just made me feel like somebody, man.
Well, so, good. Elijah Campbell is who you're talking about.
Man, yeah, tell him I appreciate him, man.
You're the man, Tyrikus.
This is what I want to talk about, bro. I want to talk about the defense is playing so bad that if Ryan Tannehill make one mistake, it's highlighted. Like, I want to know how you guys feel about that, watching the opposing offense score on almost every play and expecting our offense to do the same thing. But right when they threw an interception or a fumble or something, it's like, whoa! Just want to know what you guys thought about that.
Well, yeah, it is alarming. I mean, look, in the NFL, when you have to score 42 points to win a game, and that's what it took to beat the Texans, 42 points. That's like saying you need 70 in college football to win a game. And by the way, we've seen that in the Big 12 before. You needed to be at least in the 60s to win a game. Defenses were that bad. You know, college and pros, though, are different. But when you need 42 points to win a game in the NFL, your defense has got real, real issues. And you're right. That's just unfair to expect them to put up massive points every single week. You just can't. It's just not going to play out that way. There's going
to
be times.
24 you could get. And I think that'd be no problem for this
offense. That's not right. That's not unrealistic. But if you're asking them to be in the 30s, which, you know, they've given up more than 30 points four of the seven games, I just think that's unfair to that side of the ball at this level.
But you know what was going on, too? Up until last week, they were winning the turnover battle by a pretty wide margin. So they were overcoming shaky defense because they were coming up with some turnovers and they weren't turning the ball over at all. Now last week they had the key turnover and that was a big swing play. It just shows you the margin of error. Here's another thing that's going on with the defense. Now you would think when you have Derrick Henry, you're going to have the ball a lot, but the bend but don't break, no pass rush. They are 28th in the NFL in average time of possession, 27 minutes and 44 seconds. Now that is pretty shocking, right? It just shows you how much trouble it causes when you can't get off the field on third down. And it's also the number of, it's a volume, right? There's 17, 18 third downs they're in a lot. That's a lot of plays that the defense is on the field, and it's a lot of plays that your offense is not on the field.
Well,
wouldn't that shock you if I told you before the season started they're going to be 28th in time of possession?
It would be shock. Yeah, we would say, yeah, that's not going to happen because of the way they play, because of what you pointed out.
Because you have Derrick
Henry. Then we would also go, but if that happens, we know why that would be happening. It's because of exactly what's been happening. I mean, that's the only way to justify that. It means your defense isn't getting off the field. And
right.
I just brought up yesterday, they've only been keeping the stat for 30 years, and it's the worst it's ever been, and it's not even close. Like, right now what they are doing is going to be the worst since they've been keeping this stat, getting off the field. Third down, okay, version rate on defense, they're going to be the worst ever, and it's not even close. So you could say, well, they got nowhere to go but up. Okay. I would have said that going into Cincinnati game, and Cincinnati went 10 for 15 on third downs conversion. So can it be worse? I don't know. I mean, right now it looks kind of the same every single week. And, yeah, if you can't get off the field, man, it's just – and especially in your defense that's struggling, and you just spend so much time out. The more the game goes on, what happens? I mean, you know, you see it all the time.
We're emphasizing third down, and Mike Vrabel brought up a good point yesterday too, is a lot of the third downs are third and one or third and two.
Yeah.
And I don't care how good your defense is, the other team is going to get a pretty good percentage of those. So they got to be better on first and second down, so that they're better on third down.
Yeah, right? But second and 15
they've had third and longs too many times this year given up.
Oh, no question. So it doesn't really, you know, that's a problem too. But I would say part of the way that you would do better on third down is to create more of those and less third and three or less.
The fourth and four on Sunday is not supposed to look that easy. Fourth and four is not supposed to look like that. That was, honestly, that was probably the most pathetic attempt at trying to do anything. It wasn't the secondary's fault. It was everything up front. What we saw out of Joe Burrow on that play, I would love to go back and stopwatch and see how long he had. That was just absurd. I mean, you cannot do that. I don't care who you are. Even an average to below average quarterback in the NFL, if you give Nick Foles that much time on Sunday, he will convert third and fours, fourth and fours, whatever. At this level, if you give the quarterback all day, which is what Joe Burrow had on that play, even the average quarterback is going to look good. And Joe Burrow is not just average. Joe Burrow looks like he's going to be the real deal. We'll see. It's still very early on in his career, but what he was able to do, just sit back there and just hang out and wait and wait and wait, and it was like, is anybody doing anything?
Right. And they didn't on that one. They didn't really bring extra players for the rush. They have chosen for the most part to say, we're not going to give you the big play. We're going to force you to drive the field. We're going to try to get some tip balls, some interceptions. Hope that you make a mistake. And it really, you could say it worked because they went to 5-0 doing this, right, despite no pass rush. But when they didn't, and even the Steelers game in the second half, they got the turnovers and they were able to get back in the game. And if they make a very makeable field goal, who knows what would have happened. But when you do that, you are giving the ball to the other team a lot if your defense isn't that good. So let's go back to time of possession. Tennessee is 28th in the league at 27 minutes and 44 seconds. Now, here are the teams around them in that neighborhood, right, when you have the ball that much.
Can we guess?
Yeah, who
it's
do you think?
Got to be the Jets, 100%.
Yeah. The Jets are 31st.
Cowboys?
There is a team below the Jets. The Cowboys are 27th, two seconds per game more than the Titans. They're 27th.
Washington football team.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Surprisingly, Washington is 29 minutes and 33 seconds, which is 19th. They're a little higher than you would think.
What about the Chicago Bears team?
The Bears are 16th, right about 30 minutes. Yeah, so they're right in the middle average. Okay.
So that you said there's one
there's a team below the Jets.
Team below the Jets.
There's a team below the Jets. Jags. When in doubt, go Jags.
Jags are 29th, one slot below the Titans.
Okay. Who are we missing, Darren?
I guess when in doubt, go the NFC East. That's where all the crappy teams are.
Yeah, the Giants.
Giants are 26th, two spots ahead of the Titans.
How about the
Eagles.
Detroit Lions?
The Lions are 25th, three spots ahead of the Titans.
Eagles?
Eagles are 23rd.
Cowboys.
We said that.
We said the Cowboys. They're one slot ahead of the Titans at 27th.
Okay, I'll go on a limb here because they're banged up. 49ers.
49ers, they are fifth in the league, 32-26. They can run the ball. So it's weird because the Titans are a great offensive team with a great running game.
Denver,
they ran for 200.
Houston
is last.
Oh, Houston.
Okay.
So
let's get to the point. All right, the teams in the neighborhood of the Titans who are a great offensive team who can run the heck out of the ball. They ran for 218 yards the other day. They're all bad teams.
I was going to say, we named all the crappy teams.
Here are the teams all around the Titans in this area. Giants, Cowboys, Jags, Minnesota, who we didn't mention, who they have Dalvin Cook back, but they're 30th, and they have two wins on the year. The Jets and Houston. So it's a very odd stat that you would have the ball that little with that good of an offense and that good of a record.
It's amazing.
It's an odd stat.
Let's go back to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Clay, what's up?
Clay's gone.
Okay, yeah. We kept him on hold a long time. All right, let's do this. Let's step away.
And I have a question.
Okay, what's your question?
Well,
you want to put it out there or you want to save it?
We can save it. We'll save it for next segment.
Save it on the other side to come back and wrap up hour number two of Darren, Donick, and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint. Smoother than smooth. Coming up at high noon, we'll talk to former Titans safety Michael Griffin. So we'll talk to Griff at 12 o'clock. Derek Mason, we head over to West End at 1 o'clock. And then after the coach, Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll talk about some college football stuff, including the big melee that happened in the Missouri-Florida game at halftime. And the SEC doled out some punishment as Florida gets ready for their game against Georgia. But right now, Chase, you said you had a question about what we were talking about.
Yeah, and we talked about this last week or a couple of weeks ago, and I understand it does start up front on defense. The pass rush, the front seven, it has to improve. But I am curious, and we'll ask Griff this question at noon, when that secondary is healthy, so if Adoree's back, Desmond King gets in here, you have Christian Fulton that's healthy, obviously Malcolm Butler. If you have the secondary as designed, as it should be designed, how much slack is that truly going to pick up? How much of a difference on defense do you think we're going to see?
Even though
it starts from the inside out.
Yeah, you're saying if the pass rush doesn't change?
Yeah, if the pass rush stays exactly how it is, which is non-existent, and the secondary actually starts playing like a secondary that they should be playing and what we've seen in the past, are we going to see the defense get off the field? Are we going to see some changes made? Because even with this duct taped together secondary, I mean, they have made some plays, whether it's batting a ball down and intercepting or breaking up a pass. I mean,
Butler's been their best player.
I completely agree with that. So that's because it goes back to the point of just, you know, because defenses in general haven't been all that great. So if you get some semblance of a defense, which includes this secondary, you know, a better secondary, how much of an improvement is that going to make in that time of possession stat that you were throwing out there? And the overall, you know, just the overall play of the defense.
I think it's better. I mean, it's not going to solve all the problems, but it is on the list of problems, right? I would rank it second behind the pass rush. Like a pass rush in general helps all secondaries, even subpar secondaries, but the lack of pass rush, if you just improve the talent level of your secondary, it is going to help. Maybe they get a couple of more stops just because the coverage is better. The old coverage sack, right? That would.
Yeah. Well.
But they right now, if you take a look, if you have three wide receivers or three or four threats, as the Bengals were good enough to have, the Steelers definitely had it. Most teams these days have it. Now, the Bears may be the exception. They don't have a very deep list of targets. But when you're going against the Titans, if you've got some options, you're going to find a matchup you like. Jonathan Joseph is not a guy that can play as much as he's played and be able to cover somebody. That's obvious. Then there's Ty Smith, and then there's Kareem Orr, and guys that just aren't regulars in the NFL. If you can get enough defensive backs on the field and you have good options, that's what's being exploited, especially if you have time to throw.
Right.
They need to start bracing for the fact of what we've been talking about is what I don't know what's going to change up front, because Big Jeff is about all they got. Daquan Jones, I think, brings them to the Harold Landry has his moments, but the guys that they've got to, and I don't think the Vic Beasley thing is going to happen. I just think this is what he is. I mean, I've been saying for weeks he is a total zero out there. Now he's starting to show up this past week, and it's for all the wrong reasons. Now you're noticing him because of the wrong things, and so he's been invisible. He brings nothing to the table. You're talking about taking a bag of $9.5 million and throwing it right out the window on a windy day. That's what that looks like they've done right now with Vic Beasley, because he looks like a guy that has no interest in being here. He's a guy that looked like he had no interest in being here before, because it took him how long? 2 weeks to show up.
Right. Yeah.
Right. All the signs were ominous.
Like everything.
Right?
Well, we tried. We brought on folks from Atlanta and said, hey, you know, we tried to say, tell us about Vic. We couldn't get anybody to say anything like, you know what, don't be surprised if, you know, Mike Vrabel or the Titans can't pull out the absolute. We couldn't get any ringing, like, endorsement of, hey, it may not have worked here, but I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't work there. You guys are probably going to really get the most production or do what Atlanta couldn't do. None of that. We tried and we tried, and we couldn't get anybody down there to say, basically it was, good luck. Good luck with that.
So let me throw this at you guys, because this sort of came up in the press conference yesterday. I think it's an interesting dynamic because we've seen it in sports many times. All right, I got Darren on my team. I got Chase on my team. And I can relate. My experience with this was we had a group we called the NP Club in Blue Jays spring training. All right, minor league spring training. You notice that the first round pick, the bonus baby that got the $1 million signing bonus, he could really struggle. And he was still going to get plenty of chances. Well, hey, he was going to get all the attention of the scouts and the coaches. Whereas me and the rest of the NP club, the 25th round pick, the 30th round pick, we had to be that much better. We had to be twice as good to get noticed as much as the second, third, first round picks, the bonus babies. All right, so Darren over here makes $9 million a year. Chase over here makes the league minimum. Do you think that they're in a little bit of a mental dilemma of, well, we paid $9 million for this guy?
That's guaranteed.
Should we keep running him out there? When maybe the guy making the league minimum might be, he can't be any worse. Should we try that guy? I think that's it's a psychological dilemma. I don't see Mike Vrabel as that kind of guy. I don't see John Robinson as that kind of guy. But when you've invested that much money, like, part of you has got to be saying, come on, we're not this dumb. Surely this guy's better than this.
Let me answer it this way. So the word effort was used yesterday. I think Jadeveon Clowney, I think the effort's there. And that was a question with him in the past. It has come up. You know, does he take plays off and all of that? I think his effort has been there. It's just he hasn't connected. But I see him. I see that movement. I see him almost getting there. Vic Beasley, I think the guy got his $9 million guaranteed, and he's just collecting a check. That's what I see. And so if I'm the Titans and I know that there's a guy that's the league minimum and he shows up every day and he's putting in the work and practice, and maybe he's not just from a pure talent standpoint of evaluation and grades, he's not as talented as Beasley on paper, I still would rather have that guy and just cut my losses at this point, because I'll say it. I don't think Vic Beasley's on the roster by the end of the season.
Well, so you don't think he's giving effort? No. See, I think this is an interesting one, because
tell me where you see the effort.
Well, what I see is he played more snaps than he's played all year, and that's despite in the middle of the game having two lining up in the neutral zone fouls on the same drive, Like you would think if you've got a better option, you've got every reason to just pull him out right there.
Face palm emoji.
But they kept him in there.
That's what I was doing on Sunday.
But they didn't bench him. They kept him in there for more plays during the course of the game than they had all year long. So either it's a Jared Garantano thing and they just don't have anybody they feel is better.
Or they're justifying
and saying, listen, surely he's better than this. He can't be this bad. Maybe it's a little bit of both. I don't know. But The lack of effort, that was an interesting one. He got challenged yesterday, Vrabel saying, hey, I'm evaluating at practice. He looks like he's our best option at practice. You hear Jeremy Pruitt say the same thing about Garantano, right? I've evaluated these guys every day at practice. He is better than anybody else. So that's just something to watch for.
I will say this. I think that everybody does this in sports, and I don't fault – the Titans or anybody who does this. You try to give everybody every, especially if it's somebody you're paying a lot of money to and you know you're overpaying them and they're not worth it. I think you give them every opportunity. You exhaust everything you've got, okay, in the holster, everything, to try to get anything and everything, squeeze every little thing out of them until you can't anymore, right? Like, let's just keep it home for a minute. I think that's what the Predators did with Kyle Turris, right? They tried everything possible. They exhausted they unloaded the barrels, everything in out of their holster. They tried anything and everything. And in the end, you can't say it wasn't for lack of effort, right? It wasn't for lack of trying.
No question.
They tried, and then at some point you have to get to the point where you go, I guess we just have to cut our losses. We have to move on. Well, that's been going on for years. He's seven games in. So for them, I would say I understand what they're doing, because it's not like we had this conversation last year about Vic Beasley, and then in 2018 we had the same conversation about Vic Beasley, and everybody's going, okay, it's the same conversation over and over and over again. It looks the same. It smells the same. It's everything is the same. Move on. It's seven games. So everybody knows they're moving on from him. Like, this is it. This is a one-off. This is one and done. But I don't blame them for trying to squeeze everything out of this horrific signing, because it's $9.5 million that have been wasted. It's been just go down I-24, open up the window, and just let it all fly around on the interstate, because that's what it is. It's just being wasted, and they know that. But they're trying to salvage anything and everything they can before, when this thing is over, they send him packing. And my guess is he'll probably never play in the league again. Well, he probably got his last paycheck and he's done. But I don't blame them for not sitting him, because how many people give up that quick?
Yeah.
But I do think it's not like they have Mean Joe Green sitting on the bench making the league minimum. They must not believe in their other guys. Right, the kid from I don't know who else plays that position. They just dropped Isaiah Mack. Right, they're just
Hope to put him on the practice squad.
We got the kid from North Carolina State, the rookie. I haven't noticed anybody else getting there. They had Correa. They traded him away.
And right. I think Correa was that guy.
So what does that tell you? They are not enamored with anybody else they have on the roster. So that's got to be part of what's playing into, geez, we got to keep running Beasley out there. We don't have anybody else.
Yeah, and the whole Correa thing, like, if you don't want to be here, then don't be here. I understand that. I don't think he handled it right. But he was that guy. He was that hungry, going to go out, give it his all. Not the best, obviously. Beasley on paper should be better, but they traded away a guy that I think now, you know, behind the scenes they might look and go, man, you know, wish we had Kamale. But if he didn't want to, again, if he didn't want to be there, then you move on. But I understand what you're saying, Darren. I don't necessarily disagree, but I think at some point they are going to have to sit him and move on.
I agree with that. I'm just saying I'm not surprised that he's been out there. They keep trotting him out there because you can't just give up after a month. I mean, they know behind the scenes. They know. I mean, you don't think John Robinson doesn't go, oh, boy, would I love to have that one back. Would I love a mulligan on that one? Of course he knows. But rather than just pull the plug right away and eat it, they're probably saying, let's just keep trying, just trot him out there and hope to goodness that something happens, something turns for the better. But at some point, you're right, they're going to get to the point where they'll be like, he's now hurting us. Maybe this past Sunday was the start of that. He's not helping us. He's hurting us. Get him off the field. All right, we'll come back. Former Titans safety Michael Griffin to start the third hour. Darren Donica Chase, that's next.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.